Valley of Famine contains mature content and adult language. Check the show notes for specific content warnings. Hello and welcome, listeners, to the Rogue Valley Roleplayers. My name is Ben. I'm here with Nick, Austin, Ed, and Rosemary, and we're playing another session of Valley of Famine. Once again, my name is Ben. I am the marshal tonight, running the shindig, doing the things, all that good stuff.
Hello, I'm Nick. I'm playing Haru Matsuhara, the samurai and defender of Rachel's honor.
This is Austin, playing Herod Graves, who is sad.
Wait, Herod or Austin?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, no.
And I am Ed, and I am playing the widow, Daisy Graves.
This is a really depressing intro. I'm sad. My name is Rosemary, and I play Deputy Rachel Jane Kennedy, who's also sad because Kane died.
Yep. We open back on the city of Jacksonville. The streets are choked with bodies of Wendigo, just hundreds of them, dozens certainly. It is raining in earnest now, and it is thundering and lightning cracking the starless void above you. Lying in the street amidst the bodies of these monstrosities you've killed is that of Kane, Sheriff Ross, as he is better known by, as well as Jonathan Graves, mayor of Jacksonville. We see Herod and Daisy knelt by Jonathan's body. Off in the distance, we see Paul Flint's steam wagon heading off in a westerly direction towards, most likely towards the ranch of Rachel's sister, Cassandra. Rachel, you're standing in the street, kind of staring off towards where Paul has fled. Malcolm Locke is standing next to you, clutching his side where he was shot. I think you become aware of the grieving of Herod and Daisy.
I think Rachel will sling Malcolm's arm over her shoulder and help him walk over. She's anxious because she wants to get after Paul, but I think we need to know what's going on here. So she kind of staggers over with Malcolm.
Malcolm mutters a word of thanks as he's clutching his side. There's a lot of blood.
Haru is concerned for his friends that are kneeling over Jonathan, and Kane's body is, you know, left there. But he's also concerned about Paul rushing towards Cassandra's ranch. Due to Haru's upbringing, he's wanting to focus on the task at hand. There's time to honor the dead once this is all cleared up. So we need to get moving. We need to get moving. We need to stop Paul. We need to stop whatever's happening to this guy.
I think Rachel staggers forward and realizes who's lying in the street, that it's Jonathan. And this look of shock just passes over her face. She seems genuinely sad that he's died. Not just because now she can't prove that he robbed Stagecoach. But, like, I feel like they grew to become respected frenemies, as it were, over the course of this podcast. So she's genuinely sad. I think she'll stagger up to where Daisy is kneeling and put her, like, a comforting hand on Daisy's shoulder and give it a squeeze. And she's going to clear her throat and say, "Daisy, I'm so sorry. Don't know what to say."
"He's dead. I even tried healing him and it didn't bring him back. Couldn't do anything about it."
"He was a good man, Daisy."
"That he was.
Malcolm coughs and manages to support himself on his own weight and says, not to be insensitive, but Paul is getting away. We should be after him.
Daisy, I know I have no right to ask you of this, but I need to get after Paul. We need to get after him fast. I don't suppose we could take your airship?
Well, I've got a perfectly good airship right here, says Professor Fitzgerald, who's standing nearby.
Yeah, did I notice him last session? I think we all did, yeah.
How could you not notice?
We saw the gorilla. We saw the gorilla.
You saw his airship.
Yeah.
The Queen Victoria, God bless her majesty.
I think at this point, Herod kind of snaps himself out of his almost stupor state and stands up and looks at you, Rachel. Kennedy, can you handle Flint? Can you take him out on your own? Do you need me there?
I can handle him.
I will go with her.
Good. Daisy, to your feet. And he'll kind of try to put an arm underneath you and help you up.
We gotta get Johnson's body out of the street.
They put all that effort into stopping us from reaching that building there. And he points over at the inn. And we should take from them whatever they did not want us to take. Jonathan's death, it has to mean something.
Is there anyone else in town around right now, or do we just get...
You evacuated everyone else from town. It's just everyone that was assembled and for the battle and then the reinforcements that showed up. So Annie Oakley is there. Sylvia Redgrave is probably hanging back awkwardly since she was 0% effective in the combat, and she doesn't really want to address that. Curtis has dived back into the wagon house and comes out cradling his raccoon. He starts tearing cloth off his sleeves and binding some wounds. It looks like the raccoon is still alive, but gravely injured. And that's Curtis's entire attention is on the raccoon right now, on Rook.
And Mayfu is probably just standing ready near Haru.
Yeah.
I'm going to delegate her to help them.
Okay.
And turning to Lao, the large furred creature standing in the back nursing his own wounds, Herod will say, can you understand me?
It nods and makes a grumbling, snarling sound.
Will you watch over the bodies of my brother and the sheriff?
It nods again, stone-faced, and Lao steps over and kind of gathers up Jonathan's body into his arms and brings him out of the mud, actually, probably over to the boardwalk and lays him out on that, and then does the same with Kane's body.
Thank you. There is no time to waste. Hurry.
Malcolm, are you all right?
No, but as Wynon said, there's no time to waste. Let's go. And I think in a moment of bravado, he's probably going to fail this role, but he's going to try and teleport himself and you to the Queen Victoria.
Nice.
Gregory and Professor Fitzgerald are already like, we'll go get it ready, and are heading off to it.
Prepping it for takeoff.
Yeah. Haru, you probably see this, and this is going to be really hilarious if he fails the role. But Malcolm, like, puts an arm around Rachel's waist, and then kind of rolls his silver coin over his knuckles. He is at a -3 to do this, so we'll see how this goes. He's going to spend a Benny. Try and show off. I don't know if he's consciously trying to do it, but...
Oh, no.
Nope, this is Akotako, so...
Was he at -3 because of wounds?
Yeah, he has 3 wounds.
Oh, can we not heal him? Daisy could heal him, maybe?
Well, this scene's going to happen. Yeah. Also that. So, yeah, he puts an arm around your waist. From your perspective, Rachel, this is not really like he's making a move on you. This is just like, all right, teleporting, let's go.
Oh, yeah.
There's nothing
untoward about it.
How Haru is going to take it, I don't know. But yeah, he rolls this coin over his fingers and nothing happens. He kind of groans and staggers for a second, and his arm goes from being around your waist to up on your shoulder as he's trying to support himself.
Yeah, I'll kind of grab his arm and help him balance. Are you sure you're all right, Malcolm?
I'm pretty sure I'm not. Apparently I'm hurt a little worse than I thought. Maybe I should just have a sit down.
Rachel and I will go. You stay here and rest.
Yeah. You put one in that son of a bitch for me. Put two. He took two of my fingers, so put two bullets in him.
I will. Take care of yourself, Malcolm.
Yep. I am gonna go sit over here. And he slowly staggers over to the boardwalk and plants his back against the wall and slides down and just focuses on putting pressure on his wound.
Rachel gives this agonized look after him because he's bleeding profusely, and like that whole sliding down, she's worried he's just going to bleed out on this boardwalk and, you know, fall asleep and die.
Mm-hmm.
She's so torn, but you know she has to go after Paul, so she shoots this agonized look in his direction and then heads towards the airship. Squares her shoulders.
Do we climb up a rope or?
Yeah, there's a like a rope ladder. Professor Fitzgerald is not spry enough to do a cool leap from the prow of the ship like Gregory and Annie. So he just threw a rope ladder down and climbed down like a regular human being.
So as we're climbing up the rope ladder onto the airship, I'm like, Haru's,
I understand your concern for Malcolm. He's alive. At least he's alive.
He has a pulse, even. Yeah. Do I detect a hint of jealousy?
No, understanding.
Sorry I was so quiet this last battle, but you kind of forgot about me, so fair's fair.
There was a lot going on.
I wanted to participate.
I understand. But she has a right to be with somebody alive, you know.
Do you say that out loud?
Yeah, I mean...
Do I hear that?
If you said it out loud, probably. Yeah. I guess it depends. This rope ladder is probably not like climb up side by side dimensions. So maybe give me a notice roll because either Haru is above you or below you.
Right.
Oh, yeah, you hear it.
I hear it. Rachel, I'm going to say Rachel's above. I feel like Haru wouldn't climb up the ladder first.
He's looking down.
So Rachel.
Hey, look up.
Rachel looks down and says, "What'd you say?"
Oh, you busted now.
Just that Malcolm is alive, and I understand your concern for him.
Look, Malcolm and I, we're just friends.
But you have to admit, he is alive. For now, at least.
A pulse goes a long way. Except for living eternally.
Now isn't the time for this conversation.
It really isn't.
We gotta focus on taking down Paul. But this isn't over, Haru.
Stop being so self-defeatist. I mean, I don't know. You are going to be dead for the rest of your own life.
I'm aware.
Want me to talk to her? Just let me drive. I'll smooth things out. Don't you worry. You should worry.
Let's go.
Rachel continues climbing up the ladder.
You climb up the ladder. Gregory and Professor Fitzgerald are already getting things underway. Annie is going to come with you. And Herod, you and Daisy kind of gather yourselves, collect yourselves together, and Mayfu joins you as you step into the Jacksonville Inn, while in the background, we see the Queen Victoria, God bless her majesty, lift up off the ground and take off in pursuit after Paul. Daisy, you and Herod and Mayfu step inside. The Jacksonville Inn is a mess. It's clearly been hastily fortified into a fortress. Tables have been rolled up in front of windows, chairs knocked aside, perhaps broken down to help reinforce things. It is dark in here. There's not a lot of lights. It smells like booze. And there's a slight metallic stench of blood in the air as you step in, but it is otherwise silent in here.
So what are we looking for, Herod?
I'm not sure. Can you put on those goggles of yours that see in the dark?
Yeah, I put on the sonic goggles.
I think you're picking up a little bit of distortion. At first you think the goggles are malfunctioning, and you realize there's actually like an almost subsonic beat. Sort of a lub-dub sort of sonic motion. And you realize it's coming up from below.
He's like, well, I'm getting some kind of sonic signal from down below here.
Then let's find it.
Is there a basement to this place?
You search the building. It takes a couple minutes, but you do find a basement. At one point, some straggler, one of Flint's mercenaries, leaps out at you with a knife, but Mayfu is there to quickly break his arm and then snap his neck before he can do any harm. You make your way down the stairs into a charnel house. The basement is filled with the remains of human beings chopped up and butchered. Vats of blood. If it wasn't already readily apparent, it is now very painfully obvious that Paul was putting people in his food.
Yeah, he was serving the soiling green.
Yep. And there, you see in the basement, amidst all this gore and horror, there is a crudely made door that leads out. It's solid. It looks solid at any rate, but it's obviously not an original piece of architecture.
Plugging his nose, Herod approaches this strange item and begins to tug on it.
It is definitely locked, and possibly barred.
It's locked.
It's definitely locked. As you approach it, you feel like a pressure on your forehead. And you can hear the faint whining scream of Ghost Rock on the other side.
That's Ghost Rock. Burning.
Yep, I recognize that sound.
Can your railgun get this door open?
It's out of juice right now.
You do have an auto pick, and there is a keyhole in this door.
So it's locked from this side?
It is locked from, yeah.
Okay. Then taking out his auto pick, Herod leans down and sets it on the door lock, hoping that it can force it open.
It works at it for a bit longer, and you're almost worried it's not going to work, and then you hear the telltale click as it springs the lock, and you're able to pull the door open. It turns out it wasn't barred on the other side. In fact, there's a handle on the other side of the door, but there's no sign of a lock. So maybe this was a prison of some sort, or you don't know. It's creepy. This is what it is.
Are there any lights in here we can pick up?
There are not, but you can kind of you see it. The door opens up on a carved tunnel that kind of winds down a little further underground, and there's a glow of light coming up from below.
Okay, so we have enough to see something, but
yeah,
okay. Herod will lead the way, asking Mayfu to kind of look for threats from behind as we go down this stairway.
Yeah, Mayfu takes up rear guard. You, Daisy, are you doing anything or just heading down
I'm
these?
Kind of just following right now.
You head down this this sloping tunnel. It's got kind of stairs carved into it, but it looks like, you know, they did a half-assed job. As you go down this sense of pressure builds on all of you. and the whine of burning ghost rock gets louder and louder. It never gets as loud and shrill as you would expect it to get, but there's definitely like a muted, almost reverent ghost rock scream. And eventually you enter into a reasonably largish room filled with all sorts of machinery. There's a ghost rock generator chugging quietly in a corner. Dominating the room is a huge circular object made of metal. You almost mistake it for a table, actually, and then you realize it's you both recognize it. It looks exactly like the gate you found underneath Osiris Cordova's house. Only that was made out of stone. This is completely made out of metal. It's got moving parts. It seems to be chugging along, and the middle of it is filled with a flat obsidian plane of just voidless color.
The hair standing on the back of his neck, Herod will very carefully look around the room for any signs of threats or perhaps the person who created this machine.
You, in fact, there is a person. You see Elysian Cordova. She is dirty, grungy looking, like she hasn't bathed in quite some time. She is wearing a heavy leather apron, like you might expect a blacksmith or a Smith and Robards inventor to be wearing. She's otherwise wearing her black dress that she was probably wearing when she showed up in the Rogue Valley quite some time ago. She barely takes any note of all of you. She looks up as you enter the room with these wild-looking eyes that don't seem to recognize you, and then she goes back to fiddling with some mechanisms on this gate-looking device, and she's just like muttering incoherently to herself.
She built a new gate. She seems to be ignoring us. Let's sneak around and shut it down.
Okay. You say that, but you're looking at this, and you have no idea how this thing works.
There's a ghost rock generator, you said. I assume that's part of it.
Maybe?
Worth a shot. I mean, I'm gonna start breaking things, you know what I mean?
Don't break it. I wanna study it. This thing's supposed to let you travel better than airships. Faster.
You also don't know how to reverse the effect. So breaking things may be premature.
Oh, I see. Daisy, I think you should be the one to talk to her. I doubt that she'd be willing to forgive the last thing I said to her.
All right. Alicia!
It's Elysian.
Elysian, sorry.
She just like looks up, mechanically corrects you, and then goes back to her work. You call out her name, and she looks up again with eyes that show no recognition, kind of frowns, squints her eyes at you, and tilts her head to the side, and then shakes her head like she's trying to clear her vision, and goes back to whatever it is she's doing.
Okay.
Daisy, I know that you deal with strange devices like this regularly. Can you tell how this thing works at all? Intuitively? Uh-huh. With perhaps a weird science skill or something to that effect. Or maybe an occult role. Or maybe like a normal science skill. Or maybe like a repair
ghost
skill.
Rock goes into the flux capacitor.
Actually, give me a weird science role as you start to try and analyze this device.
That would be an 11.
Okay. There's a lot going on here. So there's the gate doesn't seem to be connected to any ghost rock generator. The generator seems to be linked up to the lights that are in here, which are all kind of not very bright, but it's also connected to, it's powering some devices that look kind of like fans almost, or these small devices that are spinning up in the corners, and as they're spinning they seem to be collecting something out of the air. You expect it to be water at first, but the liquid that drips down into some
it's blood.
It's not blood, actually. It's a silvery looking liquid, almost a clear kind of silvery tint to it that drips down into some tubes that then feed into the gate.
I'm picturing mercury,
quicksilver.
Yeah, something similar to that. Although it seems to be condensing this out of the air. As you walk up and you're examining it, and you kind of go to check some of the contraptions that are on it, and Alician looks up and immediately says, "Please don't touch that."
Well, what's it do?
And she kind of stops and looks at you again and says, "I know you. What are you doing in here?"
"Well, I think I come here to shut down your machine for now."
"What? No. No. You can't do that. No, you can't do that. Of course you can't do that. You never figure it out. Why are you trying to shut down my machine? This is how I'm getting my father back."
"Well, and how are you getting your father back?"
It's going to tear. It's going to tear a hole, a veil, between here and the other world, and he'll. I know he's waiting for me on the other side. He's waiting for it to open. It's almost ready. I can't. You can't shut it down. You can't stop this."
"Herod?
How?
Yeah, Herod.
How did you get in here? The door was locked."
"We have ways."
"What is it?" He says, looking at Daisy, trying to like hide his face from Alicia.
Alician.
"What if this works? Maybe it could help Haru."
"We need to shut this thing down right now. Are you in? What am I saying?"
"You married my brother. Of course you're insane."
"Daisy? If you shut it down and stop this, then you can study it later and do it right. And in a way that doesn't involve the sky darkening and horrible creatures from another dimension invading our world."
"What? No, that shouldn't be happening."
"Well, it is."
"That's exactly what's happening outside.
Things are hell out there."
"I have to get my father back, so I guess it'll subside. It'll subside. It'll be fine. It'll be fine. Mr. Flint said it would all be fine."
"Oh, dear.
Daisy, I'm about to slap her across the face. Talk her out of this, or I am not sure what I will do."
"Alician, if you shut this machine down, maybe I can help you figure out a way to get this thing to work.
All right.
Because you want your father back, and I want my friend back."
"I'm prepared for this. We're going to do a social conflict." Dun, dun, dun. So you pretty much have two choices here. Either you can talk Alician Cordova off the ledge and maybe enlist her help. She does seem like she's pretty off her rocker and maybe has been fed a great deal of false information. Or you can just kill her.
Yeah, I mean, my play here would be to try to convince her.
Yeah.
Because
also, she, you know, built this machine, so she probably can better turn it off and maybe preserve it for future use.
Yeah. It seems like a useful thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, this is going to be opposed persuasion against her spirit.
Oh, yeah.
I am going to give her a +2 because of her conviction that this is going to work and there are other forces feeding her madness, actively feeding it.
That's not the Lemurians.
It's definitely not the Lemurians. It's probably Moloch.
Yeah.
So go ahead and make your first argument. This is going to go 3 rounds. Right. So for every success and raise, this is one of the few times where multiple raises do count. For every success and raise, you gain a point, a success point, or influence token is what it's called. And depending on how many you collect by the end of 3 rounds will determine how helpful or not Alician will be.
So yeah, I guess that was my first point, is the whole, I will help you, like, If you shut down the machine, I will help you make this in a way that will, we can, you know, bring your father back, bring my friend back.
Okay, that's solid. Go ahead and roll. And you can roll to support this.
I would like to. how's he supporting this?
How are you supporting this?
I think he's going to use what he knows of the occult and of strange devices like this to sound like he knows what he's talking about, as though he's like, you know,
yeah,
obviously
sure.
Gonna be
we
a
can,
third
we
collaborator.
Obviously make this work.
Yes, of course. Daisy is the finest scientist I know, and she has already tapped into many extra-dimensional fields. That's a simple, so plus one.
So plus one. So you've got a total of, what, six right there?
Yeah.
All right. Oh, dear. I got a net four, so that is a success on the first round. You have a token. How does this affect Alishan? She pauses her work and looks up and looks like she's about to say something, and you kind of you hear a faint whispering, and Alishan Cordova kind of cocks her head to the side like she's listening to something. No, why? You're the ones who did this to my father in the first place. Why would you help?
Because there are demons running crazy through the streets, tearing apart our town, tearing apart our entire valley.
No, the side effects can't be that extreme.
They are that extreme. These demons killed my husband.
She gets a questioning look on her face like, do I feel bad about that? Should I feel bad about that? I don't know. I am confused. Anything else you got?
Man, that's it for now.
That's it for now? Okay.
I get one more
How are you assisting Herod?
Listen to me. You know how honest I am with you. If we don't turn this thing around, it could be the death of so many people. If there's any part of you who cares for something other than you and your father, then please help us. I will spend a Benny and try to do better. Simple.
Simple success. That's plus one to your roll. All
right. It's a four.
Oh, I haven't. I need to roll. Are you comfortable with that? Because I'm going to roll and you won't be able to spend Bennies after I roll.
I won't be able to. That's... I think I need a Benny that. I don't think I'm... Chances of getting much better than that? I don't know. That's a five.
Five? Okay. You good?
Yep.
Oh, no.
That is an 11 plus 2 is 13. Again, you hear that whispering sound, and Alishan kind of shakes her head and says, you're lying. You're lying. Of course you're lying. You don't want me to rescue my father. You're still angry about yours. No.
I lost my father. I lost my husband. I don't want to lose anyone else to this. We need to shut this down now so that we can make this better. Like I said, I will help you work on this. So this is a noble goal. To be able to reach into the hunting grounds and, you know, get people back.
And I'm a representative of the U.S. government. And what could you do with government money? That's a plus two.
All right.
All right, so that's plus two. I'm going to give you another plus two for your argument.
All right. So that would be eight.
That is a raise. Are you satisfied with that? That puts you at would put you at a total of three tokens. Well, I take that back. I haven't rolled yet.
Yeah, I'm all right with that.
You're all right with an eight?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
All right. Eight minus three. That is just a success. Two tokens at the end of three rounds. So, the target isn't truly convinced, but provides the minimum amount of support possible. I can halt the process, but I'm going to need a lot more to go on than just your words. Last time we parted, was not on amicable terms. I have no reason to believe you. I have no reason to trust you. You see a little bit of the madness clearing from her eyes. I've been locked down here for so long. I don't know what's going on.
You've been locked down here?
Mr. Flint brought me down here, showed me my workshop he provided, and they've been sending food down and water as I need it. I've just been so busy. I went up once because I wanted to get some fresh air and the door was locked, and I just went back to work.
If you shut your machine down, everything will be clear as soon as you go up those stairs. You will know the kind of people that you've been working for.
Yeah, just take a look. You're no longer locked down here, and take a look at what's happened to this town.
Just pause it for a moment, just to see.
I won't turn it off, but I will shut off the flow of ether. It won't produce any more effect. That's what I'll do, and then I will give you the opportunity to prove to me your true intention.
Good. Good compromise. Yes.
And she goes over to the generator and kind of messes around with some stuff, and you see the spinning objects kind of slow and come to a stop, and the drip of this silvery fluid stops.
Herod will take very careful note of what she pushed and when and where.
Okay, give me a smarts roll.
Okay.
Daisy too, because the ether is what
she... I'll let you go ahead and make a weird science roll for that.
Okay.
That's a simple, a four.
Okay. You're pretty confident you can duplicate it if need be.
And I got a 10.
Okay, yeah, you're definitely certain. Like, okay, that's how that works. That makes sense. Okay.
Someone talked to me about ether before. I don't know if it's Elysian.
It was Osiris Cordova, actually.
Yeah, all right.
It was actually in life. He was trying to get you to go check out an abandoned Hellstrom laboratory to retrieve something that he needed to perfect the gate.
You never got around to that.
You decided, like, no, fuck this guy. We're not doing what he asked for.
But that was the ether.
You got a raise on that. This ether, you've heard horror stories about something like this. It's not ether, it's condensed fear. Paul has been, and you quickly kind of put two and two together. Paul has been driving, he has been terrifying people, you know, feeding people, causing them to turn to monstrosities. Effectively terrorizing the valley, and is allowing Elysian's machinery to literally draw the fear out of the air and condense it into a tangible liquid form, which is then going into this gate.
Okay.
That sounds really bad.
Yeah. One giant Uruhuros of fear and...
Yeah, Elysian puts this, stops the flow of fear into this device. It there's a tangible change in pitch. Whatever noise this machine was making was kind of on a subsonic level, kind of beyond human hearing. But now you kind of you get this like pulsing, buzzing sound building in your ears, and then you lead the way up the stairs for Elysian, who. Takes the moment to strap on a couple of devices, watching you all carefully. She puts on some sort of gauntlet that has apparently a bunch of moving parts that it moves, twitches, extends some stuff, and then fits itself to her arm, to her wrist, and then she warily follows you upstairs.
Yeah, I think... Herod is making sure that we're far enough ahead of her that she doesn't feel threatened, and mm-hmm. kind of enters this room and just turns around and says, "This is what your employers were hiding from you," and kind of motions to the scene of...
Yeah, you step aside as she comes up the stairs, and she screams. She lets out a horrified scream. What the What is this? What have you done?
This is what you've done. You've called all these demons here.
Your employers have been working on foul things. There's no way we could have done this. Think about it.
She thinks about it, and then she slowly kind of nods and... Right. You wouldn't have done this. But I've spoke to my father. He said this was the right way.
What do you mean?
He came to me in dreams. He said he was on the other... He was waiting for me on the other side, that I needed to help him.
If you believe that's true, then the best thing you can do is work with Daisy here on your machine and make sure that it really does help him.
You know, he said he couldn't contact you when he visited me in my dream.
What? You tried to kill him. Why would he visit you in your dreams?
He said that you were being misled by Flynn and many dark forces from the other side in order to use him as a way to get them to have you open this gate and release all this evil into the world. Like, that's not ether. That's collecting people's fears.
Herod gives a heavy sigh, says, "You had a dream about all this and you didn't tell us?"
Well, y'all don't believe some of my stories.
You're right. Fair. I wouldn't have.
Give me another persuasion roll. You can try and support this if you like. Are you also, like, are you just showing her the charnel room, or are you taking her up to the surface so she can see, like, the...
Oh, yeah.
We'll take her up if she's willing. I just thought the charnel room was a good example of just pure evil.
It was...
I thought we were bringing her all the way up.
So. Yeah.
No, she got as far as the charnel room, which is proof enough that she's like, okay, if you have more to show me, I'll come with you now.
Okay, then yeah, we will. We will.
So yeah, you add to your growing list of evidence the bodies of the Wendigo littering the streets, the dead that are lined up, Cain and Jonathan, and also, you know, the sky without stars or moon or anything, and the dusty texture that's accumulating over everything, the streaks of crimson that the rain is leaving.
I think it's really just a series of, like, silent points to the various carnage.
See?
Exhibit A, Exhibit B, Exhibit C, Exhibit D. Yeah, so go ahead and make this roll at a plus 4.
All right. Is that with Herod helping?
He can help, yeah. Herod, how are you helping?
Yeah, he'll help by picking up one of the Wendigos and, you know, sort of like lifting one of its arms up and allowing her to see its face by just kind of tilting the neck back and then letting it drop with a sick thud to the ground and just kind of looking at her very seriously.
Okay.
So maybe a persuasion?
Sure.
Simple, plus one.
It's plus one.
That makes it an 8.
This is an opposed roll.
You can do better. Come on.
All right. Let's go. Let's have no bennies.
That's right.
Excellent. Now combat will break out.
Yep, because that's still an 8.
Dang it.
Are you comfortable with that?
Yeah.
Sometimes the dice just hate you.
What about 8?
Well, that is a 4, so that is a success, and that kind of... Your overwhelming evidence finally, like, sinks in, and you see Alishan go paler than she already is, given that she's apparently been locked up in a basement for who knows how long, a month or more, several months. She's been here since June. Whether she's been locked up in the basement since June, you don't know. A hand goes to her mouth, and you hear her just say, "Oh my god. Quick, we've let's go." And she turns and rushes back into the Jacksonville Inn.
Alright. I follow?
Yep, we follow.
Deadlands and Savage Worlds are the property of Pinnacle Entertainment Group. All content is used unofficially under the Savage Media Network license. Find more of their great products at peginc.com. Sound effects are by Plate Mail Games and Battle Bards. Music by the Eaglestone Collective and Danheim. You can find links to all of the above in the show description. As always, thank you for joining us for this episode. If you've enjoyed this, please consider leaving a 5-star review on iTunes or wherever else you listen. Thank you once again, and we'll catch you next time.